Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. On the line with me, V-neck status down.
It's true.
My good buddy and soon-to-be snowed under, Cameron McCoy. How are you doing, friend?
Great. I'm ready for winter to be over, but, you know, that's for the weather podcast that we do, not the Magic podcast we do.
It's even more intriguing than our Magic podcast, if you guys can believe that. Which, by the way, Cameron, I have to say, I'm a little saddened by the lack of V-neck. Even in snowy weather, man, you got to bring your A game.
It's true. You know, I was dressing this morning and thinking, like, will Curtis be disappointed that I'm not going to put on a V-neck over just a regular crew? And clearly, I have disappointed you.
Yeah,
and the audience, I mean, really. More the audience.
But more the audience, which is who we're here to serve. I mean, Cameron, when I pop on the thing and there's no V-neck, I'm actually hearing Adele in the background. That's how tragic it is. Okay? So, Cameron, it's a Pro Tour week.
It is.
And I know how you like to study that Pro Tour video.
relentlessly, yeah.
Relentlessly, but it's a ton of good news, actually. The great coverage and the format did not get busted, which I think is definitely the best case scenario. So we'll go over all that. Talk about Masters 25 packaging and some other things. But first, we're going to talk about what we're playing right now. Cameron, it's a Modern-centric week, so we're both playing Modern. Talk to me about it.
Yeah, so this week, I, you know, had some Magic Online space bucks or whatever you want to call them, and I was just doing some trading and moving some cards around and was able to get like some Steen Vents and a single Scalding Tarn and whatnot to build Jeskai Control in Modern. So this is not the Geist control list. This is more like your Snapcasters, like one of Torrential Gearhulk, and then you're running Bolts and Helixes. And comparing this to the blue-white control list, which I really, really like, the Gideon control list I think is really, really solid, I just felt like it was sometimes just two or three turns too slow, where you can still manage to control the board, but you're not able to, like, one burn spell and it can be over, right? Like, that's kind of how that works. And so having access to Bolt and Helix and Electrolyze is huge. Like, I can't believe how much better my game feels because of those cards. I'm a little bit faster. You know, you can burn them out if you need to. You can just get rid of that one pesky whatever card that, you know, that you might need and you don't have a Path to Exile on hand. It's really, really good. So I would highly recommend checking out this list. And there's nothing better than Torrential Gearhulking into a Cryptic Command. Like, that is living the dream, in my opinion. I think only doing, like, a Dig Through Time could be better. So, anyway, really, really like this list. And I would tell you, if you're in the market for a control deck in Modern and you haven't yet gone the Jeskai route, I would totally recommend doing this. I have essentially all the elements in paper as well. So I think next week I'll play this in paper at my shop and give it a go because I really, really dig it.
Does it play Spell Queller?
So I have like three Spell Quellers in the side, and I'm bringing the note. I mean, honestly, I feel like it could just have them in the main at some point. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I would give up. Maybe like one Cryptic and then like maybe a Wrath or something. But it is Wrath heavy. I'm playing two Supreme Verdicts in the main, which I like because it's just an easy way to, you know, clear the board when necessary.
Cleans up that mess, right?
Absolutely.
Well, you know, I'm interested to see kind of how those decks fall. There were actually quite a few control decks at the Pro Tour. I would point you to a match of Paulo Vitor, Dama de Rosa. He played that deck.
Okay.
Or at least he played Jeskai with Torrential Gearhulk. So I'm assuming it's a very similar
probably
list.
Probably very similar, yeah.
And some really sweet hashtag MTG Finance recommends from yours truly, because, you know, we're great with that.
Oh, yeah.
We are
the
source for your MTG Finance news. I would actually start picking up Torrential Gearhulks within the coming months.
They're at a cheap price right now, and, yeah, they're only going to go up, so.
Yeah, I think Well, they rotate out in October, so they might see a bottom. But then I honestly feel like it's a very modern playable card. and
weird, yes, yeah.
Yeah, so I would tell you, like, it's got the whole price going up after rotation written all over it. So just something to keep your eye out for, right? And if you have any disagreements with our finance information, feel free to tweet it at MTG Dustin. He'll be happy to respond. Anyway, he gives us all our financial advice. Uh-huh. Cameron, last week I played Grixis Death Shadow and the deck was hot fire in my hands.
Yeah, yeah. Right? How'd it go this week?
The opposite. The opposite. So, part of this is just me poorly sequencing things and keeping some greedy hands, which that is one of the things you really have to battle with Death Shadow. There's a lot, a lot of one lane hands. And so you kind of have to determine if that's how you want to live your life for that game. But I kind of, the one thing that I feel like I lost that's generally a decent matchup is against Scapeshift. Like, I mean, it's not anywhere close to 70%, but I feel like it's slightly tilted in Grixis Death Shadow's favor just because I'm a touch faster. And I lost that matchup, and then I got paired against Burn and 8-Rack.
Oh.
And so both of those, the Burn matchup was close-ish. I was able to pull out one of the games. But, you know, I went from 4-0 one week to 1-3 the next.
Mm-hmm.
And the deck just, you know, sometimes it operates better than others. But of course, anytime I don't do well in Modern, I just tell myself, should have shown up with Storm.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, but that's a thing that'll probably happen next time I play. but yeah, I got to be honest with you, of all the, what have we been doing this for 4 years, basically?
Essentially, yeah.
I feel like Modern's in the best place it's been.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right?
And I was really worried about the Pro Tour, and we'll talk about that this more in a second. But, you know, people are showing up with different decks, and people are incentivized to buy in, which is something that I think, as a Legacy player, I always wanted for that format.
Mm.
And it just, no one ever felt incentivized. It was always, and at least in my community, guys that already had the cards.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that were willing to play, and it was like a ticking time bomb of when they would sell out once their Legacy collection hit a certain number, and then they wanted to pay for a honeymoon or, you know, something like that. A friend of mine literally bought a car with their Legacy collection. And so with Modern, though, I'm seeing people acquire and hold on and loan to others, and my store has steadily grown with it, which has been really awesome. Are you guys still seeing at your shop, like, heavily, like, attended Modern FNMs?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, Limited and Standard, it depends on like what the Standard environment is. And I would say that for the past 6 months, it's been pretty weak just because of the nature of Standard, right? But Modern and honestly Legacy to a lesser extent have both seen like some really steady growth. I mean, we were starting with like maybe 10 to 15 players in Legacy, and now we have like sometimes 20 to 25 show up, you know, every other week. And then every other week on that, we have Modern, and we average anywhere between 20 to 25, and then if it's like a really good week or popular week or something, we can get, you know, upwards of 30, which, you know, like, you know, you just have to imagine there's 30 people playing Modern, there's 30 people playing Standard, and there's like 20 people playing Limited. You know, I mean, honestly, there's only like one really strong Magic shop in Des Moines, in this part of Des Moines. There's one down the south side that's really good too, but like that sort of turnout is... I guess welcomed in a lot of ways, and it does make me feel like Magic is still in a good spot. It's not like doom and gloom. This game is going to be done. Sell your collection now. People love this game, and it seems to just continue to have a steady growth, or at least a moderate growth, which I really appreciate.
Yeah, and I mean that has borne out. Like, I feel like Standard's kind of stagnated in my area. And I live in Kansas City, I would say, is very Standard-centric.
Mm-hmm.
And Modern has gone from 3 to 4 people showing up to now we average over 10, no problem. And this is a smaller shop.
Sure.
It's been really great to see. Now, I do think, you know, the Magic is dying stuff is pretty high on the old clickbait, you know.
Yes.
Scale where people are just, oh, we got to generate this conversation. Things are dying, you know. that's up there with like, hey, let's spend our entire podcast talking about tribal modern decks. There's certain things that are going to generate a lot of clicks for you, sure, but that's not necessarily good content, right?
And yeah, yeah.
Anyway, no, I mean, I will say we have been doom and gloom about Legacy, and I feel like rightfully so because of the state of the format, but Modern, I think, is just in a better place or in a different place. So
yeah,
if you're one of these people that's on the fence, like you're a Standard player and you're looking to add to, or you're a Legacy player and you're looking to jump down, I think there's stuff there for you. My one cautionary thing is, while there are affordable Modern decks, I would find, like just like we say with Legacy, proxy up and try.
Mm-hmm.
Don't funnel yourself into something where you're stuck with it and it's boring.
Yeah, unless it's fairies. Just go with it. Just be guy.
Dude, fairies is not boring. Fairies is super interesting. The problem is it's not good.
Yeah.
You know, where you could end up with something that's boring and not good, like Merfolk. That's a different discussion.
Sure.
So, Cameron, let's get out of the segment, come back, talk about the Pro Tour. This week, we'd like to thank a few of our patrons, Brian Dale, Bill Jannon, and Paul Harris. Thank you guys so much for helping to support the show. We appreciate you. If you'd like to become a patron, go to spikefeed.com and click on the donate button. We'd love to have you. All right, Cameron. So, Pro Tour Rivals of Ixalan occurred. We've got the top performing deck list. We've got the top 8 deck list. Right now, the finals are being played. It is Mardu Pyromancer versus good old Lantern Control. And so I've watched a little bit of this. I do have some, like, not so much coverage, but structural critiques that I want to go through. But I want to talk about the deck list first, because, like, what great news, right? I alluded to this last segment. Diversity, man. The thing that we want. What sticks out to you about these lists?
Just the variety, man.
Well, we call it a plethora. Would we go that far?
A plethora, right? Yeah. I mean, it's clear that Modern is dead looking at this list because nothing's been solved. No, this is really, really good. We're seeing, you know, Jund, humans, Abzan, more humans, Lantern. I mean, like, we have so much here and so diverse and so exciting and... Man, I can't believe, especially if you were to go back, I think, to that first year where I just remember we had, like, I wasn't really in the know yet, but some harsh criticisms of Modern and, like, what it was as a format, and it just felt like it was constantly, like, this balancing act of, like, banning things, and we wanted more stuff unbanned. But just looking at this list now, in 2018, I would tell anybody who's into Magic and isn't playing Modern and has an interest in it should absolutely get into Modern. Like, I just feel like the diversity is there. The play styles are there. It doesn't matter what type of deck you want to play. There's something that's actually really competitive. You can, I don't even think like there's a tier one, tier two deck anymore. I feel like there's just a ton of, like, there's 8 really good decks that you could play and have really good success with. So, yay.
Yeah, a buddy of mine messaged me, and you can't put a measurement on Saffron Olive's influence on the mainstream Magic player, but it's a lot.
Mm.
And anytime he does his budget Magic, I see people talking about it at the shop, or, you know, his, like, I think that article series is called Much A Brew About Nothing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it's incredibly popular with players at the shop or people that I talk to. And a buddy of mine sent me some Abzan budget list. I want to say it was an Abzan on Burial Rites deck. And he said, what do you think? And I said, dude, just put it together.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because once you have... The nice thing about Modern is it's mirroring Legacy in that once you have Fetchlands, Shocklands, your ability to go between stuff is very easy.
Yeah.
And, I mean, yes, there are a few expensive cards, like the Liliana of the Veils, the Tarmogoyfs of the world. Mm-hmm. But, boy, there's a lot of decks that aren't those, that don't use those, and that are very competitive. And so the other thing that really sticks out to me is there was such a level, and this is going to sound like a criticism, but it's not, because everybody would be like this. But the level of diversity was so large that there were moments where the commentators and or the players didn't know certain cards, because there was just that variety and them kind of talking it through, you know? Mm-hmm. So nothing but positive in terms of that. Now, I do want to say a few things about Watsi's decisions with this Pro Tour. Okay, now look, we can go through the time zone thing again. It started like 3 a.m. here.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily the best decision, but guys, we got to do something about limited at these Pro Tours. what I would love is for Pro Tour Dominaria, they just debut Arena as the limited outlet, because I'd be much more likely to watch that, and I think it would be much more engaging.
That'd be cool.
But I had multiple people talk to me at the store that said, yeah, I flipped it on, and it was Modern, and I turned it off. And you can actually see on the Twitch the variability in viewership based upon whether it's limited or constructed.
Mm.
Right? And I think one of the big problems is not so much that people dislike limited, but limited is kind of like a sport that you have more fun playing than watching.
Sure.
Right? And my hope is that Arena kind of alleviates that somehow, but especially watching people draft is an exercise of brutality, man. It's just too slow of a pace. It takes too long. It's not interactive.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I would mention with this, and Cameron, if you actually watch some of it, this would stick out to you like a sore thumb. They have one song for B-roll.
Oh, no.
Not necessarily B-roll, but like title cards.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And it just loops over and over and over again. You'll hear it in your sleep if you have the stream on for more than 45 minutes. Guys, you got to get some more music.
Mm-hmm.
You got to. Last thing I want to point out is I think this Twitch exclusive partnership is actively bad, because watching the archive matches in order is next to impossible. Hmm. So here's the scenario. I pull it up and the day is ended at whatever time, let's say 1 o'clock in the afternoon, because this is all in Spain. So I'm like, okay, I want to watch the archive broadcast, but I don't want to watch limited. On Twitch, I can just pull up the past broadcast that's 11 hours long.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And I can only fast forward at 128 times speed. So it takes like a literal 10 minutes to fast forward.
Yeah, no.
You got to get this stuff on YouTube faster. I know you have an exclusivity agreement, but part of that should be Twitch getting their archive broadcast crap together, because
yeah,
it's terrible.
Yeah.
So that's all the negative stuff, Cameron. Are you going to go back and watch any of this?
Yeah. This is something, I mean, like yesterday I was watching old Legacy Pro or Legacy stuff from Star City from 2014. Like, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. That's what I do when I'm like on the exercise bike, right? Like Magic is really, really good to just focus in on, and you can just completely ignore workouts. Like, highly recommend that, right? So, as soon as this stuff is up online, I will definitely, I should say, I know it's up online. When it's on YouTube and maybe a little bit more easy to just access, like a 45-minute match, that's what I'll do. So I can't wait, too, because, I mean, just based off all this stuff, I mean, I want to play, like, three of these decks, like, today, right? They look great. So,
yeah, so good job on Pro Tour. Now, we also got some packaging for Masters 25. There's Jace. There's Azusa. There's, I think it's Platinum Empyrean, but it's something like that.
Uh-huh.
We don't know the third robotic looking guy what he is. Hey, Jace is getting another printing. I don't know there's much to say. What do you think about that, Cameron? It's another master set.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be really curious to know about like the collectors with Jace, as far as like if they're upset that it's getting yet another reprint that's driving the price down even more. I don't know. Like, it's kind of weird to me that Jace continues to get reprints, yet Tarmogoyf and Liliana are still, you know, hovering at $80 to upwards of over $100, depending on what card you want. I don't know. I would love there to be, some more reprints of other cards, I guess, right? So
yeah, hopefully Liliana is in this set.
I would like that
a lot too. There are a number of players that have kind of expressed to me the frustration of the cost of Liliana. because it's one of those, just kind of like Snapcaster, they sneak up on you.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot what card. Oh, I was talking about somebody. Manamorphos is worth more than like $6 now.
What?
And I had no idea. Yeah. So some of these things, I think, especially when you're an established player that you have established decks, you're not really paying attention. And so it's really easy to say, oh, who cares about the price of these things? But some of this stuff, I think, still needs to be kind of monitored down a little bit. I know Scalding Tarns are creeping up past 70 again. So it's a little concerning.
Yeah.
So Cameron, last week we had thought experiment. We quantum left, right? Oh boy.
Yeah.
And we talked about modern becoming the dominant format. Now, here's the other thing I just kind of want to talk about. And I feel really conflicted about bringing this up on this show because one of our stated goals of having this show from the outset has been, our mission statement, if you will, Cameron, is that we will cover legacy, modern, standard, and to some extent, a limited extent limited. Meaning we don't veer out into what's going on in these other like EDH and Cube, et cetera. But there's been a little bit of a groundswell with Pauper. And I wanted to talk about it a little bit. So Pauper's been added as side event Grand Prix. So for those of you who don't know, Pauper's a commons only format. And it's been, you know, around on Magic Online for quite some time. And what it's really done on Magic Online is given a budget friendly constructed option. However, that's changed. And so now Pauper decks on MTGO are between $50 and $150 online, and it's spilling out into paper. And now we're seeing it at shops. My shop is starting a Pauper tournament, and I was completely stunned at the positive reaction from people in the room. And so a lot of stores are turning to this as their eternal format because the reserve list can't touch it, because reserve list contains no commons.
Yep.
I expressed my, I don't know, and then someone told me you can play both Brainstorm and Counterspell, and then I was like, okay, well, that's intriguing. There's also a Storm deck. But Cameron, let's just go a little bit even crazier. The Pro Tour used to be Standard, Extended, which is what Modern replaced, and Block. What if Pauper became something that's pushed by WotC as a new product? Will it scratch that eternal itch?
Ooh.
And should it be a PT format?
Oh, man.
I'm going into this very blind, okay? I would also love to hear back some tweets from listeners throughout this week of, like, what you think of the format, because no one would call me a Pauper expert. But is this the avenue for a legacy-like format, I guess, is what I'm saying. So what do you think, man?
Oh, man. I've played Pauper some here and there. Like, a couple of years ago, the shop was, like, trying to get a Pauper tournament going every other week. And while it had some popularity to begin with, it really kind of just nosedived. Because I think people, like, well, if I'm playing Brainstorm, I'd really like to be playing a Fetchland as well. You know what I mean? Like, it's that sort of thing.
But your shop is also an outlier in that you have 25 people show up for Legacy.
Like, sure. Man, I don't know. I mean, it would be a good outlet, but I feel like Pauper, and this is coming from somebody who doesn't play it, and it might sound insulting, it just seems like it might be too cute for like a Pro Tour sort of thing. I like it as being like this kind of like little outlier thing that happens at Friday night and it's on Magic Online. But I just personally would not want that to be the format, I guess, right? So I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, it would add some diversity to the Pro Tour, but at the same time, it's just not my thing.
No, I totally understand. I'm curious about this certain, like, because again, Pauper's been around forever, okay? This is not necessarily a new format. But suddenly now, and we're seeing this in price spikes, there's a ton of Pauper cards that are shooting up in value. And so how much of that is the finance community looking for a new thing? You know, it's like old school all over again. Or Frontier. Our good old buddy Frontier.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it would be interesting if you worked at WotC and you're a product manager saying, hey, this is an eternal format we can actually get behind that pushes like they could do a Popper Master set. I'm yeah. serious.
No,
like,
no, you're totally right. It's, it just sounds it, hilarious, but you're totally
it
right.
It sounds hilarious, but in terms of the products that they can promote, I'm going to get... It actually makes more sense from a financial standpoint for them than Vintage Masters or Legacy Masters. Right?
Yeah. No, you're right.
And EDH is always going to be constrained by the fact that you can never put that on the competitive stage. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That would be ridiculous. And so, because the format is inherently kind of busted and there's a ton of variance because of, it's a singleton deck.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what I'll say. My shop tries Popper. I will try it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
GP has a side event in Popper. I will try it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
But I'm really on the fence of if it feels a little bit more legit to me than Frontier does in terms of its kind of groundswell and what could happen. But I'm also concerned that, okay, if these Popper prices get high enough, why aren't people just buying Modern decks?
It's true. Yeah.
So, again, this is going to require a ton of feedback as well from, like, our audience. Like, if this is something that's worth thinking about or if it's just a blip on the radar, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But the professor at Tulare Community College has been pushing this quite a bit, and Channel Fireball has added Popper events to every Grand Prix this year. So,
yeah,
that's stunning to me on its face. So we'll see what happens with that. Cameron, we're going to get out of the segment. We're going to come back, and you're going to talk about this movie called The Post.
Yeah, a little indie film. Yeah,
which I would assume is a basketball film. So we'll be right back. All right, Cameron, are you ready? Let's call a timeout. It's time for sports trivia with Cameron.
It is the Super Bowl this tonight, right?
It is the Super Bowl this evening.
Yeah.
The professional football game that I am least likely to watch because it is so stuffed with filler and garbage. But I'm interested. Do you know the two teams that are playing in the Super Bowl?
Yes. I heard this on NPR. We have the Philadelphia Eagles and the New England Patriots. And I believe it takes place in Minneapolis.
This is also true.
Yeah.
This is also true.
Which would have been exciting because Minneapolis was, like, I guess, in the playoffs last week or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and then they lost horribly.
Yeah, they lost. Okay, but okay.
It was kind of a bummer. I have family that are Vikings fans,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it's been rough for them. The Vikings have never won a Super Bowl. One, thankfully, at the expense of my Kansas City Chiefs. So, Cameron,
mm-hmm.
there was also a meme going around this week with Jeopardy. Did you see this?
No.
So, on the Jeopardy, they had a category called football. Okay?
Okay.
And on that, they asked a series of questions in which no Jeopardy contestant got right.
Sounds about right.
So, what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you those questions.
Okay, I love this, yeah.
All right, so let's go through these. This play is a play in which the quarterback either runs the ball or chooses to pitch it to another back. What kind of play is that?
Is that rushing?
The correct answer is option.
Option, okay.
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 Tom Landry perfected the shotgun formation with this team.
Green Bay?
The answer is the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, Cowboys. Okay.
Okay, last one. A person that's receiving a kick. They can wave their hand in the air to signify this so they will not be tackled.
Signify, I should know this. I don't know.
It's a fair catch.
Oh, it's a fair catch. Sure. Okay.
So
I'm batting 1,000 there with the Jeopardy contestants. That's great to know.
So, Cameron, I want to emphasize again, because when we had Spencer Howland on, he was convinced this is a bit. That we are just like, this is a joke that we are like somehow composing, that you know all this stuff. No. No.
Not at all.
Not at all. All right. So, Cameron, let's talk about what else has been going on this week. You watched a movie that's an Oscar contender.
Yeah, yeah. So, Tom Hanks, Meryl Streep, Steven Spielberg. Like, how could this movie go wrong, right? It's first and foremost, like, Spielberg's just, like, makes beautiful movies now. Like, you almost, like, take advantage of the fact that, like, it's so well produced and so well directed. Camera movements are just, like, stunning and whatnot. Performances are great. And, like, really, like, this is, like, the cinematic universe of Robert Redford's All the President's Men, right? I mean, like,
right.
It's, like, it should literally just lead right into All the President's Men. I mean, the end of the movie kind of just – it's like that. It feels like a prequel. Really dug this movie. I wouldn't say that it was, like, the most amazing movie or, like – you know, 10 years down the road, will it be like one of the best pictures ever made? Probably not, but it is definitely a just a really strong movie about journalism, free speech, First Amendment, all that stuff. It was good. You know, I really, really enjoyed it. I will say it was kind of interesting. It really focuses on the Washington Post and like what they did to stand up against the Nixon's administration at the time. And I felt like it really downplayed how important the New York Times reporting was concurrently happening. I mean, like, they're the one who broke the story.
Broke the story,
right?
Yeah.
And were really, I mean, I don't know. Like, they just really downplayed the fact that they were just as important in, like, those Pentagon Papers, I guess. But that would be, like, my one criticism I felt. But overall, great, like really well acted and just a great film. So check it out. It's fun.
Yeah, yeah. There's been a ton of criticism about like downplaying the New York Times involvement in journalism circles about like how is that appropriate or not? Mm. And do they feel comfortable with it because of the current state of the New York Times? That's
sure.
That's a really lengthy discussion that's rife with inside baseball. But there's also kind of this interesting side story because in the real All the President's Men story, this woman played by Meryl Streep mm-hmm. is like really significant and she was kind of omitted from that film. And yeah. So it was kind of a way of kind of getting her back involved and kind of showing her. Like there's an actual still photo floating around from the film and from the actual newsroom where it's Woodward, Bernstein, and her, and then in the film, it's just Woodward and Bernstein.
Sure, sure.
They, like, literally mimicked it and just took her out. So yeah. I'm intrigued to see it. I haven't yet. Now, let's just a nice and easy segue into Halo Wars 2.
Of course, yeah.
Right, right. So, hey, again, just kind of going through games. I'm near Automata. I'm actually hoping to get to this afternoon after I get through a bunch of my paperwork for today. But still only a couple hours into that. I'm really interested to kind of have an at-length discussion with you on it because mm-hmm. I do like it a lot. Mm-hmm. I do like it a lot. But Halo Wars 2 was another thing I picked up on the cheap. It came out midway through this year to like next to no fanfare. I think it came out like 2 weeks after Zelda or something.
Oh, wow.
Like,
okay. Yeah.
It just got subsumed by everything else that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what I'll say. It is a console RTS that is really good at being a console RTS. There is no way this game should be $60.
Mm.
At $30, it's a wonderful 7-hour diversion campaign. And in many ways, basically every way, the storyline to the Halo War games is better and more interesting than the mainline Halo.
Interesting. Okay.
Like, it's not, like, good. Like, sure. You know, it's not The Last of Us or something, but it's comprehensible, which I think is a really admirable trait. You understand what's going on in the story, and playing an RTS is actually really refreshing because, like, in the PS2 era, RTSs came out for the consoles all the time, mm-hmm. and they're always super weird and wonky, and they can never be as good as StarCraft on a PC. But this is actually a ton of fun. I had a blast going through the 6-hour campaign, building bases and making warthogs and all that kind of stuff. So I think, you know, because you can get it for free on Xbox Game Pass if you have that. It's totally worth a download and just play for a week and play through the campaign.
Nice.
Because these kinds of strategy games just don't come out hardly anymore because they're not that popular.
Right, yeah.
I mean, Civ feels like it's the only Civ game. You know, like all those kind of...
Yeah.
What we think of as PC games that used to get ported a little bit to the console, there's a whole subset of guys like me that had only ever played them on a console.
Sure.
And so kind of getting back to Command & Conquer, Red Alert, that kind of stuff has been really cool. So, hey, it's a mild suggestion. I told you this. I did play Shadow of War for about an hour and found it to be not engaging at all. So I kind of put that down. So anyway, Cameron, that's us for this week, man. We'll be back next week with more modern discussion, likely.
Likely.
But
yeah,
we got to get on this standard format, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Got to. So anyway, if anyone wants to get in touch with you and talk to you about sports trivia and your point spread for the football game tonight, where could they find you?
Yeah, that's all on Twitter, @Cameron_McCoy.
I'm @CurtisNow. Our official show feed is @SpikeBeatMTG. We will check you guys next week.